The Hannah Gray, Mayor of Bromley podcast. Championing small businesses. Hannah Gray has been serving the community as a local government councillor for several years. She was nominated to be the 2020-2021 Mayor of the London Borough of Bromley at the height of the COVID pandemic in March 2020. Hannah has for many years been known as one of South London's most prolific small and medium enterprise networkers. Before becoming mayor, Hannah was Bromley's business champion, promoting and helping entrepreneurs achieve their business ambitions. She's now dedicated to helping promote SMEs, charities, and voluntary organizations to learn from their experiences for the benefit of all.
I'm really thrilled today that I am being joined by Alison Delaney. Now, Alison has really inspired many, many people, including myself, and has got this amazing book out at the moment because, of course, we are talking about World Book Day and inspiring young people. And this is a book for younger people, The Little, or Not The Little Chick Has Lunch on the Moon. And I think it's inspiring for adults as well because, Alison, you really allow young people to follow their dreams with this book, don't you? Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And so tell us, with this book, before we go into the details of the gorgeous book and the wonderful graphics and the inspiration, I need to tell people who you are, really. So you're an author, which we've just said, and a public speaker, and behavioural cultural change specialist, I think, if I manage to put my teeth in correctly for that. But also, I think you really inspire people and encourage people to be the best that they can be. And I'm wondering, where did that start, Alison? Where did that come from in your world?
Well, it's always been a fundamental foundation of our upbringing. As fostered and adopted at a very young age, 3 months, and we were always encouraged to love, to care, and to nurture as a foundation. And so as I grew up and moved through life, it was always a core focus, and I knew how it made me feel when I could connect with people and empathize and help. And it became sort of a mission in my life, if you like, and also sort of built my own personal resilience in being able to cope with the different kinds of scenarios that I was presented with through life.
And you were fostered into a white family, weren't you?
And that's right.
Was that a cultural problem at the time, or was it easily accepted when you went to school?
Well, no, being a mixed race child in the 70s was, really quite unheard of to then be adopted into a white family. And so I always knew I was different, but didn't really understand the reasons as to why. And my mum was always very, very supportive in relation to being accepting of everyone, and we all have unique qualities, and that's what makes us special. So I never felt I stood out because of my colour, but I knew that I was different. And a lot of that messaging came from the people around me outside of our family unit. So children wanting to touch my hair because it was different, children looking at my skin and rubbing my skin to see if my colour would come off. And so as subtle as those moments were, it was very apparent that I was very different in some way, shape or form.
Yes, that must have been quite tricky, even though you had the wonderful support of your mother and your family. It must have been very tricky. I can't imagine what that must have felt like. So for you to move forward in your world and help people and understand people and connect with people, that really must have been the making of you as a person to really embrace all of that and still go forward and wanting to help others. That's quite a remarkable thing. And I think that's what shows in this lovely book. As simple as it appears on the outside, it's really inspiring young people, isn't it? And inspiring them to follow their dreams. Maybe you could tell us how you came about writing the book itself.
Absolutely. So in relation to sort of the embedding of my belief system and understanding how I wanted to address these challenges that I was experiencing. There was one particular moment in my life. I was about 7 or 8 years old at primary school, and we were playing, as you do as little ones. A little boy ran over to me and stood in my face and called me a gollywog. And I didn't understand what a gollywog was, you know, but I certainly felt there was an unpleasant energy that was attached to the language. And so it made me feel uncomfortable. And I remember going home and saying to my mum, "Mum, what's a gollywog?" And just for a split second, seeing her face absolutely drop and, you know, the colour drain from her face. But then very quickly, her grabbing hold of it and grabbing hold of me and sitting me on her knee and saying to me, "Alison, there are going to be times that people don't understand you. And they'll say things that are cruel or unpleasant. And there's two ways in which we can deal with that. One is to mirror that behaviour and be unpleasant back. The other is to educate them and to help them to understand. And we always choose the latter." And so that was a real core message from a very young age, that actually it wasn't about judgment, it wasn't about dismissal, it was about seeking to understand where those messages were coming from and then helping people to understand it through my eyes. And so Little Chick Has Lunch on the Moon is very much about creating an environment where children are able to explore their dreams and aspirations without judgment and without limitation. And if I say to you that, you know, if I've had one child say they want to be a Ninja Turtle superhero, I've had a million, right? But, and often you'll see the teachers' faces drop as they're going, "Oh, no, that's not a sensible choice." But it is for them. And it's not what they tell us, it's what it means to them. So why do they want to be a Ninja Turtle? And it's because they can help people. They've always got a message behind it if we just are patient enough to allow them to steer us through their journey, remembering that we're a guest in their world. Yeah. And as adults, you know, we have a habit of assuming that we know best, right? We've lived our lives, we're full of wisdom. So actually we enforce our journeys and our experiences onto our children. And so often that can limit their ability to explore. And it's often based on the fears that we experienced growing up that we don't want them to experience. So it's always coming from a good place, but it does hinder their opportunity to widen their mindset and really consider what's possible.
So true. And I've heard a few stories that you've told me of children's dreams and how, you know, the teacher sort of thought, "Oh gosh, that's not really very sensible." And then as you explored it with that child more and more and more, it turned out that they wanted to actually do something, but they weren't sure how to express that. I think one was a lion. They wanted to be a lion. Is
that
right? Yeah,
that's right. Yes, it was a wonderful workshop that we were doing, and the way that the workshop plays out is very organic and fluid. We sit and we read the book, and then we talk about what it means to them, and then go into, "Well, what would your dreams be?" And a little girl put her hand up and she said, "Mrs. Delaney, I want to be a lion when I grow up." And out of the corner of my eye, I saw the teacher's face drop, and she was trying to get my eye contact to kind of apologize. And so I managed to sort of have her just sit back and wait to see where this was going to go. And I said to the little girl, I said, "A lion." I said, "What kind of lion would you be?" And she said, "I'd be a boy lion because they've got the biggest hair." And all the children sort of laughed, and we did the roaring as to how we'd sound as lions. And then I said to her, "So how would you be a lion?" And she said, "Mrs. Delaney, have you been to the theatre and watched The Lion King?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, that's how I'd be a lion." And of course, those unassuming statements from children that, "Well, you must know because I know what that means." And of course, what we do as adults is we put their story together through our eyes, which often means we get it wrong. And so I said to her, I said, "I have been to the theatre to see The Lion King, but you explain to me what that means to you." And she said, well, actually, I could be two lions. And I said, go on. And she said, well, I could be the lion that's the puppet, or I could be the person that's inside the puppet being the lion. So I said, so what do you want to be then? And she said, I want to be an actor.
Mm.
And that conversation took maybe 30 seconds, a minute. But so quickly, what we do is we shut our children down very early on, because what they're saying doesn't make sense through our eyes. How could you possibly be a lion? Don't be silly. Come on. Let's think of something that's feasible.
Yeah. I was chatting with Lord Harris the other day, and he very much is, you know, of the Harris Academies, and he's very much wants people to follow their dreams, wants them to work hard, wants them not to be shut down, wants them to be able to follow. And he was very proudly talking about many of his successful children. He's severely dyslexic, and he didn't learn to read, I think he said, until his 50s or 40s. And even now he only scans, but he won't let that hold himself back, and hasn't, and he doesn't want it to hold children back. So I think, you know, I think you two are going to chat at some point, but to be able to do workshops with the children to follow their dreams. So with the book, so can we just talk about the process of what happens with your wonderful book? I know people can buy it online anyway, but or in the shops when they're open. But when they get their book, if it's in a school, how does that work? Does the whole class get a copy of the book, and do the teachers read it with them? How does it work?
So our desire is that the workshops are fully inclusive. And so what we like to have happen is a whole school experience, so no child feels excluded. And so a corporate organisation can sponsor workshops, or the schools themselves fund their workshops, and every child gets a signed copy of Little Chick Has Lunch on the Moon. And the reason that I wrote the book was because we started to do workshops initially without the book. It was very much just a facilitated environment where we were able to enable children to explore. But what was very clear was the sustainability was reliant upon the capacity of the teachers. And we know that they are so inundated with having to keep up with Ofsted reports, and even more so now with COVID, just the processes and procedures that they have to follow means that they are time starved. And so I wanted to be able to leave the children with something that meant it didn't matter whether the class never revisited dreams again, but they had something that they could look at on a daily basis. So the book has a section at the back, after they've read the story, where they can capture their own dreams and aspirations. Now, what this means is they're starting to do goal setting from a very young age. And they're starting to think about, well, if that's what I want to be, what are the steps I need to take to get there? But equally, it brings the triangle together that we so often struggle to have connect, which is the child, the school, and the parent. With the book going home, it means that the parents and the siblings are automatically involved. And so the conversations continue outside of the school and often in the wider community, because, of course, the children are often from the same areas. So it's a process that is far more extensive and fluid than the immediate class that might experience it, or the immediate school. And on top of that, because I am very passionate about empowering children all over the world, for every dream shop that's delivered, we donate the equivalent amount of books to less fortunate children, whether that be in the UK, which is what we've been doing since COVID, because we typically donate to third world countries. And with COVID, obviously, that's been limited. But we've done a lot of work in South Africa and in Kibra in Africa with the children. And the children from the UK absolutely understand that they are the catalyst for enabling these children across the other side of the world to have the opportunity to receive their own book and begin that process of dreaming. And that's what's so powerful about it, because it enables them to understand that their power is global. It isn't just in that school. It isn't just in their area or in their town or in their city. They have the ability to impact the world.
That is so powerful and so positive. And it's the most encouraging workshop for young people I've heard of in a very, very long time. So
thank
when
you.
They've got the book, they, you would go in, would they get to meet the author as well? And you'd go in and work with them for a day and work through their dreams like the young lion. Would you do
yes.
that?
Yes. So we go in, and if it's a full school experience, we're able to take a team in. We work with the teachers initially to help them to be in the right place to ensure the environment isn't limited in any way, shape or form. And it also gives the teachers the opportunity to reconnect with the very purpose of becoming a teacher, because they're so distracted by often the processes and procedures that they have to follow that they're starved of the time to just connect with the children at the level that they would choose to. So the Dreams Workshops enables that for the teachers as well. And so we go in and we will create the workshop that works for the school. So if it's a whole school experience, often we'll send the books in advance and they'll read the books prior to the actual event day. They'll have questions ready for the author. They'll have already established what their dreams and aspirations are and have had some wonderful conversations. So we go in, we have those conversations in assembly, then we go into each of the classrooms and they share their dreams and aspirations. And at the end of the day, we bring their parents in and the children stand at the front of the assembly and share their dreams with their parents as well, which is incredibly powerful. And we do an activity with the parents as well, where we take them back to when they were the age of their child and have them identify what their dreams and aspirations were, and then explore whether or not that happened and the reasons as to why. And the reasons that we do that is because so often we don't recognise we're stealing our children's dreams unintentionally based on our own fears. And so it enables them to think differently about the opportunities for their children, but equally to talk differently in relation to encouraging those dreams and aspirations.
So true. One of the things I was talking about, actually, again, with Lord Harris, was obviously limiting beliefs being quite... quite difficult for people because they're actually trying to help. They're not trying to stop someone from following their dreams. They're just, as you said before, seeing it through their own eyes and
Absolutely.
Trying to help someone do that. And he was saying how he really wanted everyone to follow their dreams. And we discussed how wonderful it is to be able to do and earn a living from what you love doing. It doesn't feel like work. It feels
that's, right.
that's your dream. That's what you've always wanted to do. You aim towards it. You work hard. You know, it's not just handed to you on a plate. And sometimes you need a little luck to go along with that. But then to wake up every morning doing what you love doing, having been able to follow your dreams, is such a wonderful way to live your life, isn't it?
And most definitely.
To encourage the children to do that and to encourage the parents as well. Not only just to be able to talk to the children and be able to encourage them, but they must also revisit, as you're saying, their own dreams, their own limitations. Maybe they can start doing things that they felt that wasn't sensible for them to do and that they could now follow, even if it's a hobby, follow some of their dreams. Because I know you work with adults as well as children.
Yes.
I mean, today, because of it's World Book Day, we're talking about your lovely book. But with adults, you also deal with limiting beliefs. In fact, I've got a note here saying a winner of Outstanding People Development Award. So it's all ages. and I know because you've come into a place of work of mine and you've worked with teams there. So you work in corporate as well as charity, as well as individuals.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I heard you talk about was the accountability ladder. Now, that might sound like mumbo jumbo to some people that are listening to us now, because just to throw that straight into the middle of a conversation doesn't give it any placement at all. But because a lot of my podcasts are intended to give snippets of inspiration to people, especially during this time in lockdown when maybe they are losing hope or have lost a job or are pivoting their businesses and are maybe not always in the right place. I was thinking that the accountability ladder, if you can explain it briefly, might be of use to people. They might find that a useful thought process. So would that be possible?
Most definitely. And it's a, you know, it's a common tool. They can Google accountability ladder and they'll find lots of different variations of it. But essentially, it's a foundation that we use to enable people to take personal accountability and ownership and therefore make sensible and healthy choices. Now, the reality is we're all flawed, you know, so let's start there. Nobody's perfect and we get things wrong all of the time. And, you know, there's a question as to whether or not it is wrong or right, or actually it's just part of the journey that we're meant to go on in order for us to develop and grow. And I personally feel it's the latter. But the accountability ladder helps us to assess where we are and how we're feeling and the impact that those emotions are having on us physically, mentally and emotionally, but then also give us the opportunity to be able to understand how to move forward out of unhealthy spaces. And so it's a ladder of 8 runs. On each run, there's a statement that helps us to understand where we might be. Now, the first 4 runs, 1 to 4, are where we are applying a victim-like mindset. It doesn't mean we are a victim. It just means we're using victim-like thinking. And that makes us feel really quite powerless. And the brain doesn't like that. The brain likes to be in control and it likes to feel like we've got a plan. So it will throw lots of different feelings and emotions and narratives our way to try and get us out of it. And so when that's happening, it can impact us in quite unpleasant ways. So we can become anxious and worried. We will go off our food. We'll have different sleep patterns that will be disturbed. We may be less tolerant. We might be quite moody around our loved ones. So nothing uncommon and nothing that anybody would say they haven't experienced. But the longer you stay in that state, the worse the feelings and emotions become. And that's where it can start to lead into more serious situations like depression and, you know, more physical impacts like IBS, like anxiety. And so, again, having a tool to be able to work through it is the first step to being able to gain some control. So the 1 to 4 is, one, I'm unaware and unconscious, which is the denial stage. So I can't believe this is happening. And COVID is an amazing example to use this in relation to. If you think about when COVID first happened, so many people were in the space of, well, it's just the flu. There's nothing, you know, it's not really this bad. And of course, now we know it really was and continues to be. But we have light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccinations where we're seeing a way out of it. We're not going to live without it. I think it's going to be like flu. We'll always live with it, but we'll have a way of dealing with it. The second element is I blame and complain. So it's everybody else's fault. I will point my finger outwardly. So, you know, I can't believe the government haven't given us clear direction and guidelines, but yet I'm still not listening to it and I'm still going out and socialising. So, you know, there's the incongruency where I'm not taking personal responsibility. I'll make excuses is the next one. So I've got to go out because.
Yeah.
And probably we don't have to, but we're not necessarily taking it seriously as we should be. And so we're just popping to the shops or we're just popping to our friend's house. And of course that makes sense because we are social beings. So being shut down and locked in isn't natural for people. And of course they will want to go and socialise. The challenge is that we didn't necessarily recognise the impact that that was going to have. And then the fourth element on the ladder is our wait and hope. So fingers crossed somebody will fix this for me. Okay. And of course, that's where we've been for a good while with COVID. It's kind of, well, what's the answer? I can't do anything about it. Surely it's somebody else. But of course, there were things that we could do and still things that we can continue to do. So when we put ourselves in the position of not having any control, that is where the victim-like mindset happens and we feel powerless. And that can have a real impact on our mental health. And again, we've seen those spikes in children and adults throughout COVID and throughout lockdown because we're not necessarily taking the actions that we can or we're limited in what we're able to expose ourselves to. So the top part of the ladder is where we are able to be more responsible, which makes us feel more powerful. And the brain likes that. So it will send us endorphins and it will send us narratives and belief mechanisms that help us to support it. So number five is I acknowledge reality. Well, look, this is what it is. I can't change it. You know, I have no control over it. So I just have to recognize this is my current reality. The next one, number six, is and I'll own it. So I take responsibility for the fact that there are things I can be doing during this time that will make me feel better, my family feel better, and protect the community. Number seven is I seek solutions. So what else can we be doing that might help this scenario? I mean, one of the things we did in our village was we identified vulnerable people in the village and we all clubbed together to our local pub, who would then send out meals to those families. So we felt like we were coming together to support the community, there which were, again just makes you feel good.
There was lots of that in Bromley. Lots and lots of that in Bromley. Amazing number of volunteers. And I've been around handing out certificates to say thank you to them. I mean, it's not much, but I try to get out there and do what I can, because lots of little groups of a few roads at a time have got together and done exactly that. It's incredible what people have done, and really taken responsibility and done the best that they can do. I stopped you in your tracks.
no, and that's exactly the point. And you can see where we're functioning at the top part of the ladder with those decisions, you know, and it makes us feel better. We feel like we've got some control, we feel like we're making a difference, and we feel like we're making something happen that moves us forward. Number eight on the ladder, making it happen. So the accountability ladder is just the tool that is a conscious reminder to assess where we are, how we're feeling, and the choices we can make to move us into healthier spaces if we recognise we're potentially working against ourselves.
It's a really powerful ladder, and every time I hear you talk about it, I recognise all of those steps in myself, every single one of them. Even though I like to think I'm a very positive, take control, get on and make the right decisions in life, there are times when I am right down the bottom of that ladder, and I'm sure other people, if they are honest with themselves, would admit that too. There's a time in your life where you will just, you know, not feel as if you are the victim, feel as if you know you can't do anything about it, and then you just need to take a good look and think, no, I'm not. And I was talking to one of my other guests, and one of her phrases was, it's all right not to be all right. There are days where you do just accept that it's all right. We're not all going to be 100% all of the time, but you shouldn't stay in that place for very long. You should maybe just reassess it, and that's where I think your accountability, or the accountability ladder, really can help. You know, see where you are and see how you can move forward. And doing something good for someone else, something kind for someone else every day is a wonderful feeling. It can be the smallest thing, as a smile and a good morning to someone on the other side of the road, obviously keeping socially distanced, but, you know, or a phone call to someone, or it could be something really small, but it's an act of giving, and it really makes you feel good in yourself and helps to lift your spirits, doesn't it?
Most definitely. And you know, the world is so connected through COVID in a way that it has never been before, and what we've seen are many examples of people finding ways of connecting and recognizing the benefits of it, the necessity of it, but also the positive impact of it. And if there's anything that we've learned through this, you know, terrible time, because it has been terrible, is that when we make the choice to make a change and to make a difference, and we come together to do that, we are incredibly powerful.
Incredibly, incredibly powerful. I mean, there are a number of examples of people coming together and wanting to make a change. And I mean, Captain Sir Tom Moore, if I've got that in the right order, was an incredible example of a very inspiring man that the nation wanted to do something. They didn't know what to do, but they wanted to do something. And they you know, hooked their hope on Tom Moore. And what a wonderful man he was, and how he managed to unite everyone and bring bring us all together. And there's many other people doing similar things, raising thousands of pounds for charity and really pulling us all in together and realising that we are all in it together and supporting each other. And I think the world has really learnt a lesson from this, and hopefully our communities won't lose that tremendous sense of community that we've seen during people's painful times. I've seen a tremendous amount in Bromley, and I've actually been around the vaccination centres recently. They've let me out because the restrictions have allowed me to go, and to say thank you to all the frontline workers and the test centres and their faces. It is quite a happy place, you know. You'd think it was you wouldn't necessarily walk in thinking, oh, this is going to be a happy, jolly place to be, but they are really positive because it's the way out. It's the light at the end of the tunnel, and people really can see that, and I think the nation is slowly but surely lifting its spirits, and we have come through this and will come through this and will come out the other end. My son said to me, you know, Mum, a virus hasn't beaten us yet and this one isn't going to either. And I thought that was a really good philosophy.
Most definitely.
Very positive.
And I think that the thing to remember is that it's not about sitting and looking outward for the answer. The reason we have made such incredible movements during this time is based on one person's decision to collaborate and connect with others. And so, you know, if we're ever sitting there thinking, well, I can't do anything, I can't make a change, we are very misled in that thinking, because it only takes one person to do something positive that encourages others to do the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm just going to, because we're on book day, and I could go off on a tangent with you with all of these wonderful works that you're doing, but I just want to pull us back slightly, because I'm hoping that there's another book in you, that we haven't just got Little Chick Has Lunch on the Moon, which is not a just, it's a lovely book. It's so well, the pictures are so gorgeous in it as well. It's a really gorgeous experience reading the book, and it's very pure, and it's fun, and I want to know what's in the pies. You know, the man on the moon is holding the pies. I want to know what's in those pies. I suppose I could make up my own decision as to what's in those pies if I had enough of imagination. But is there another book in you? Have you got something to follow along and make it a series?
Yes. So the second book is written, which is called Little Chick Finds His First Best Friend. And this is where Little Chick goes through the countryside, meeting lots of different animals, but the animals have specific qualities. And the reason for this book is to help children to recognize that everything they're looking for externally, they hold internally. And so not to seek external acceptance, rather to tap into their internal qualities. So we've got, for example, Happy Hedgehog. We've got Rude Rabbit, who is only being rude because actually nobody's ever told him what he's doing is rude. And Little Chick lets him know that that's not okay, and he changes his behaviour. And we've got Miserable Mouse, but Miserable Mouse is only miserable because he's not yet had his breakfast. And as soon as he's had his breakfast, he's happy. And so, you know, Little Chick goes through the countryside meeting all of these different characters. And as the children are reading the book, it helps them to identify what qualities they want in themselves. So it seems like they're searching for Little Chick's first best friend. But ultimately what they're doing is they're saying, I have all of these qualities and therefore I am my own best friend, first and foremost. So that book's written. We're just looking for sponsorship for publication. And then that will form part of the Dreams Workshops. So they've got Little Chick Has Lunch on the Moon, which is about holding on to your dreams. Little Chick Finds His First Best Friend, which is about the self-belief that you are worthy of those dreams. And then the third book that is in conception is Little Chick's Nest Egg. And that's about helping children to understand finances. And so in the series, there's holding on to your dreams, believing you are worthy, and understanding how to finance them to bring them to fruition.
Oh, I think you've got this sorted. I think the world's going to be just a much better place. I wish I was a 4 or 5 year old starting to read at the beginning of the journey. But I think I'll just have to pretend I am and do it anyway. It's great. It's absolutely great. I love it. And I've loved talking to you. I've just got a couple of little sneaky questions that I haven't warned you about, but they are are very similar to questions that you may have used yourself when coaching or encouraging people and individuals. So I don't think they'll be too shocking for you.
Okay.
One is, if you were to name somebody that's inspired you, who would that be? Don't think about that one.
So Maya Angelou is somebody that had a significant impact on my life based on a book that I read at a turning point as a teenager. The book was called I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and it really helped me to understand some of the feelings and emotions that I was having at that time, but equally how to manage and contain and maintain my own self-worth. And so Maya Angelou is incredible and has been a huge inspiration. But closer to home, and I'm sure many people will say this, my mum is my biggest inspiration. You know, she chose me, and I don't underestimate the power of that choice. And she truly saved my life, because knowing my birth parents' background, it was quite unhealthy, and that would have been an environment that I would have had to have navigated. And often we are, you know, an outcome of our environment. So I feel incredibly blessed. And my mum is an educator, or was an educator. She's now retired, but again, a bit of a trailblazer in relation to children with special needs and getting the right support for them at the beginning of that journey, and that recognition that they needed different styles of teaching. And again, is a person that has always said, everything is possible. You've just got to care enough to make a difference, connect with hearts and minds, and collaborate with like-minded people to influence change on a global scale. And they're my core values, and they're the values that run through my business as well.
Yeah, I've heard this story of your beginnings, and you've talked about your mother with such passion to me in the past. I'm not at all surprised, and as you will recall, my answer on that occasion was my own father.
Your dad, yeah.
So I see that. And our parents are so important to us, especially if they're very positive influences. So I can understand that. That's lovely. And the last one, maybe a little flippant, but maybe not. Some people have surprised me, is it's the dinner party question. So if you were to, obviously I'm going to be there. I've said this to everyone. Yeah, I've got a lot of dinner parties lined up. who would you have, if you had to choose maybe a couple of people around your dinner table, from the past, from present, you know, they don't have to be here alive today, but who would you have around your dinner table, and why?
Mm-hmm. And again, I'm probably going to be a little bit different in this respect, because it isn't necessarily anyone would know or recognize, and I haven't got a specific person per se, but it would be children. And the reason that I would bring children to the dinner party is they see the world in a completely different way. And so the kinds of conversations that are generated through their naivety and their vulnerability, and just the way in which they think that is unlimited, and the questions as to, well, why isn't that possible? Why would you do that? Generates very different kinds of conversations, and often has us as adults question why we have learnt these behaviours that are actually obstacles in our own way.
Yeah.
And so revisiting that child within us and tapping back into the childlike brain is so freeing that I think I'd probably enjoy a dinner party with children more than I would with adults. Is that terrible to say?
I can relate to that. I really can. We could probably eat all the naughty food that we're not allowed to eat now as well, couldn't we?
Absolutely.
And those crazy combinations that children love to eat, and that we teach ourselves we shouldn't. So, yeah, no, I think that's a lovely idea. Oh, I'd like to come to that one. Yes, please. And I don't mind if we've all got to sit on the floor. It's fine. We can do
Absolutely.
All of that. Yeah, we can do all of that. Oh, that would be a lovely dinner party. Oh. Well, I've really, really enjoyed our chat today. I think you've been, if I may say, as usual, very inspiring. You're so articulate in explaining why you do what you do, the passion behind what you do. And it's a real honour to know you and to chat with you. And if there's anything I can do to facilitate your work, I always will, because I think it's fabulous work that you do. And young people are very, very lucky if they are fortunate enough to have your book, go on your dreams workshops, and be able to discuss their dreams with you. I think you really do empower young people in a beautiful way. So thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for being on my podcast today.
Oh, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. And not just by me, but by the thousands of children that we're able to support through the Dreams Workshops. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Alison. Thank you for joining me today. If you know someone or are someone who should join me, please get in touch. Meanwhile, believe in yourself, support others, and please stay safe.